it's in Revi. I said yesterday, in other words, we don't have too many instances in the Torah. We have an opportunity to see how Moshe conducted diplomacy when he had to deal with other nations. And there's a little narrative over here about his request. He sent a request to the king of Edom for permission for the Jews to go through. I mean, of course, the Torah is not going to record it unless they have some important ideas over there. So I want to go through it and see if we can, learn some ideas from this. All right, let's go through the thing together first. Vayishlach Moshe Malachim Mikodesh El Melech Adam, and Moshe sent messengers from Kodesh to the king of Edom. Ko amar achichi Yisrael, thus said your brother Israel. Ato yadata, you know, eis kol atzla asher mitza'asnu, all of the hardships that have occurred to us. Vayerdu avaseinu Mitzrayma, and our fathers went down to Mitzrayim. By Neshev Mitzrayim Yom Rabim, and we dwelled in Mitzrayim for a long time, for many days, literally many years, of course. By Yareu Lano Mitzrayim V'Lavosenu, and the Egyptians dealt evilly with us and with our fathers. By Nitzak El Aroshem By Yishmak Olenu, and we cried out to God, and He heard our voice. By Yishlach Malach, and He sent a malach, vayotzienu Mitzrayim, and He took us out of Mitzrayim. Vinei anachnu b'Kodesh, and now we are in Kodesh. Ir kitzei gvulecha, the city which is on the edge of your border. Nabrano b'artecha, let us go through your land. Lo nava b'sadeh v'chorem, we won't go through the field or the vineyard. Lo nishtem mei be'er, and we won't drink the waters of the be'er, of the well. Derech HaMelech Nelech, we will go through the king's road. I guess that's the main, the Mefarshim say it's like a main road. Not local, not small local roads, but the main thoroughfare. Lo Nite Yomenu Small, we won't turn to the right or to the left. Adash HaNavar Gvulecha, until we go through your land, until we pass through your land. Okay. Vayomer Levedom Lo Sababi Pen Bacher Veitzei Likrasecha. So he refused. Edom said, you shall not go through me, through my land, literally, lest I come out against you with a sword. Okay, then from Yutessanon, there's another request, which may seem strange, because he already was turned down, so why is he requesting it again? So it's, Vayom Re'elov Ne'esuel Bamsila Nala, Vive Mechanishta Aniyo Miknai Venasati Michram, Rakein Deva Baragla Yavora, Vayom Elo Savar. Basically, the Ramban explains this, that the second request is different than the first, because there were two ways they could have gotten through the area. One was the direct approach to actually enter, to go through the land. And that would Derech HaMelech Nelech. That was the first request. That's the preferred. That's what they would have preferred. So when he was turned down, so Moshe Rabbeinu thought that there's still another chance, because there was a way of going by the mountainous region surrounding the land, which would have also been helpful. Right, but for which he also needed the permission. So he thought that perhaps he just doesn't want them to enter into the countryside itself, into the country itself. But if they're going to go on the mountain range around the country, you see, in other words, without coming near the cities, there's a difference. For example, you can go through a land and you can go through the actual heart of the city, or you can go around. Let's say they have the throughway or something like that. This is a little bit different. But that was the second request. He thought perhaps he just doesn't want him to enter into the actual cities and towns. If you take a look at the Ramban, he explains it. And so therefore Moshe requests, Vayom Elo Savar, you see, you cannot go through. Vayetzei Edom Likrasu Bi'am Kavei Tviyot Chazaka. And he came out with a strong army and mighty hand. Vayomoyin Edom Nason Yisrael Avar B'Gvulo. And Edom refused to permit the Jews to go through his boundary, by Yehi Yisrael Me'olav, and they turned away. They chose a different. In other words, they had not been given permission. They had not been given permission to fight against them. Okay, I'm not really concerned with the second part over here. Okay, we're in Bamidbar. Let me just make some. Let me make it clear what I'm basically concerned. I'm not concerned with the second part. Not today. In other words, the second request. All right, let's just leave that alone for a while. I'm concerned, basically. In other words, you see that this was an important thing to be able to get permission from the king of Edom, and Moshe framed the message. I mean, it's a number of psukim over here. You know, the Torah doesn't go into detailed information usually with something like this about the specifics of a diplomatic exchange. You see, Moshe framed his message very carefully. So we'd like to want to understand it. What was the strategy behind it? There must have been a certain strategy. Now, of course, we see one thing. I think it's important to point out that the initiative, so to speak, failed. It failed because he was refused. But the point, the fact that something fails does not necessarily mean that it wasn't the correct thing at the time. That's what you have to realize. In other words, you don't judge the success or failure. So we're going to say, like Moshe, what are we going to do? Study the parsha. Let's find out where Moshe went wrong. Did he, in other words, he made a mistake? I say no, not necessarily. Of course, it's possible. It doesn't mean Moshe is not infallible. He can make a mistake. But the fact that it failed doesn't mean that the approach wasn't correct. All of a person can't control. The fact that a person uses chachma and he works things out rationally does not mean it's going to succeed in every instance. Of course, rationality is the best tool that we have. And in the long run, it's going to guarantee the greatest success, but a person is in a situation, he has to approach somebody or he has to try and work something out. He can be as rational as possible, take into consideration all the factors and still fail. So I'm going to try and analyze this. Let's try and analyze it internally. In other words,
is there another place
wrong? The strategy that he used. Now, what are the questions? If you take a look at this, the message, what would seem to be difficult about it? Are there any questions? I mean, is it clear from the psukim itself what he's trying to do? Or are there questions over here that have to be raised?
I'd say that he's looking
at this point in the questions, not the answer. The first thing you have to do is to analyze it. Let's analyze it. Let's take it apart. Now, the thing that struck me as strange is the operative part of the message. The operative part seems to be Pasuk Yitzayin, Nabra Navi Artzecha. That's the point of the whole thing. Nabra Navi Artzecha. This is the what he wants. This is what he's asking for. And then he states the conditions. Lo Nava Basar Devachorem, Lo Nishtime Be'er, Derech HaMelech Nelech, Lo Nita Yomru Smol. This is the essence. This is the heart of it. Why does he begin with the whole story of Mitzrayim? Why? How does that fit in? I mean, is it just a attempt to evoke certain emotions of pity or whatever? I mean, he has to go into all the detail over here. Or as if he felt, just along the same lines as Gerty mentions, that if he felt that for some reason it is a good thing to mention that they were in Mitzrayim and they were released, so why does he have to mention about Nitzak al Hashem? In other words, if Moshe, for whatever reason, we don't know at this point why it's important to mention that they were in Mitzrayim and that they were enslaved, you know, to refer to the whole enslavement. What's the point of it? His concern is just to go through the land. But if you want to say, for whatever reason, that it is beneficial, why? See, every point is important over here. It's not that big a message that the Moshe didn't just write a general thing over. Every specific is important over here. So it's Van Nitzach, he says, Vayarei Olonu Mitzrayim V'Lavoseinu, Van Nitzach Al Hashem V'Yishma Koleinu, V'Yishlach Malach, V'Yotzeinu Mitzrayim. That's an important thing. He shouldn't merely have said that we suffered in Mitzrayim for many years and now we're out of there, we want to go through your land. What does he have to mention Van Nitzach? Okay. I'm sorry? Yeah. All right. Vayishlach Malach? Right. In a thing like this, usually, when you want something from somebody else, you have to realize also that when you're asking for something, which is a significant request, you're trying to affect the person. It's always good to hit him on many levels. See, in other words, it's the thing itself may have more than one appeal, more than one significance. All right? In other words, you could be right that you're hitting him on different levels. You're hitting him on different levels. So you're going to choose your words such that there's the... But I want to know what the essential is, though. See, I want to know the plan behind it all. He could have chosen... He wants to show an example that God will be with you. Okay. He could have chosen other examples of the fact that God will be with you. I'm not denying that that's a factor as well. Okay. I want to know, though, what is the... In other words, what was the essential strategy of Moshe? One time. Before we go on, yeah? In other words, it's hard. It's hard at first glance to see what Moshe is getting at over here. First, he seems interested in building up the case of how much they've gone through, so make it a little bit easier on us. And then he says, well, Vanitzak al Hashem, and God helps us. So then we do have it easy already. I see your point. It's true that he alludes to the factor of, the amount of pain that they've gone through already. I would also say, though, Gertie, in a diplomatic thing, it's always good not to overdo something. If one of your points, you have to realize also that exactly. When you're framing a message and you want it to affect somebody on the emotional level, it's not just the logic, it's how you present it too. There's a quantitative factor. And if a person is asking for mercy and he wants to mention, you know, because of the circumstances, the bad things that have happened to him, it's good not to overdo it also. It's good to just it has a certain... There's a certain benefit. Overdoing something too much already takes away from the effect. But, alright, I don't know if that's the factor, though. Okay. A lot of people want to speak. Please, when you speak, though... that itself is not a contradiction. A lot of times, when I want to mention certain things that we've gone through together, but I'm afraid you may have sort of forgotten them, or you're sort of distorting them, you don't want to face them, so I'll say, listen, you know, as well as I know, you see at the north at the hearings, you gentlemen know as well, as well as I do that we have to have certain things.
Can't deny it.
Yeah. Like, don't start in... he's got to establish a certain common ground. All right. Let me go on. I just have some more... Look, obviously, I'm not saying over here... My objective here is not to exhaust the entire area, in other words, to explain every nuance and every pasuk. I just want to make certain basic ideas. It may be a breakthrough, an opening. I'm not saying that these are exclusive, because as Mr. Klein makes a good point over here, is that it is multi-determined. There's many layers of... he chose his words in a way, because he wants... It's an appeal. He wants to move the other person emotionally and intellectually. He tries to hit him on many levels. All right, I'm looking for a basic framework. That's what I'm looking for. Now, before I go on to that, I want to... Joel pointed out, there are certain medrashim over here. Okay, take a look at the Rashi's. Achicha Yisrael. So Rashi says, Maro lahaskir kan achva. What did he see over here to mention achva, brotherhood? What's the point of mentioning brotherhood over here? Elo amar lo, but this is what he really meant to say. Acham anachnu, we're both brothers, bnei Avraham, the sons of Avraham. Shenemar lo, to whom it was said, ki ger yezarecha. Your children will be a stranger. It's an allusion to the enslavement. And that debt was incumbent upon both of us to pay. What is it? So what? What?
Is that true?
What?
Is that true?
Well,
why not?
Let's think. Keep Yitzhak. So it has to be through Yitzhak, right? Listen. I don't know over here. Yitzhak had two children. One was Esav. Now, had Esav been a tzaddik, clearly it was not the purpose of Yitzhak to exclude him. In fact, he was going to give him the brachas. So you see that. He was not necessarily excluded. Had he followed the Torah, had he followed the this way of life, he would have been included, and he would have together. They would have been Klal Yisrael. That's true. I don't know. What's his point? Ati Adate is called law. There's an ongoing thing over here. You know all of the hardship. Lefichach pir shevicha me'al avinu. This is why your father... He's giving him a lesson in history. He's giving a lesson. This is why your father separated from our father. Vayelech el eretz mipnei Yaakov achiv. And he went off to his land, away from his brother Yaakov. Bifnei Ashtarchov amutl aleihem, because of the Ashtarchov, which was mutal, which was incumbent upon them. V'tilu al Yaakov, he put it on Yaakov. So you see that this was intended for both. This was not only intended for us. This Ashtarchov was intended for both, and your father separated because he didn't want to pay the debt. Now, what is one second? There's a whole through. Whatever it's true.
What is true?
Let's just follow. Let's just follow the argument over here. So what's the point of all this? So true or not true? What's the point of it all over here? Why is he telling this to him? He's giving him a whole lesson in history about your father who had a chov to pay, didn't pay the chov. So it's Nabrinu Biartzecha. If you take a look at Yud Zayin, Nabrinu Biartzecha. Ein lecha la'orer al hayerusha shel Eretz Yisrael. This is the conclusion of that argument. Therefore, you have no basis to complain, to argue about our inheritance of Eretz Yisrael. Kishem shelo parata achov, just like you didn't pay the chov. This is the culmination of that argument. In other words, what he's telling him over here is that on a different level, according to Chazal, this whole thing is referring to it's on a different track. He's telling him that that's why he brings up the whole thing of brother. Yeah, we're really brothers. He's bringing it out in the open. We're really brothers, and you too. I recognize the fact that you too might have a claim over here. I'm aware of that. You too might have a claim because we're all from Avram, and the land was promised to Avram. To the descendants of Avram was promised the land. Therefore, I'm trying to tell you that when it was promised with a condition. And the condition was Ashtarchov. And I want you to know that your father separated because of the Ashtarchov. And that's why he tells him about the whole suffering. That's why he's telling you about the whole suffering. Now it fits in. Therefore he tells him about how we went down because we paid the Ashtarchov. And see, according to Chazal, there's no problem. Everything works out beautifully. In other words, he was aware that Edom, who's a descendant of Esav, right? Might have a complaint about the Yerusha, the fact that we're getting the land of Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, why would he have a complaint? Because he was entitled, because he's a descendant of Abraham. I mean, we see this, by the way, this is a very powerful factor. I mean, you see today, there's no question in the hostility between the Arabs and the Jews over Jerusalem and everything. It's based upon this is a very powerful motivation that they're the rightful sons of they're the sons of Abraham. They're the rightful heirs. Who are the rightful heirs over here? You see, with Christianity it's a different, they try to come in through a different way, that they're the new Israel, whatever it is, but they don't have that blood claim. In other words, the Arabs, it gives them, I mean, in terms of emotionally, they claim the common descent from Abraham, so that's a stronger motivation. But here he's bringing it out in the open, and he's saying that don't think that you have a claim over here. There's no claim, because it's true that you're a descendant of Abraham, but there was a Ashtarchov, and now I'm telling you about the Ashtarchov. We paid the debt, so now we're coming to collect the land.
He's not being mercy. In fact, he's telling him that, hey,
look at this. First of all, how does this fit in? I mean, this is clearly not Pshuto Shel Mikra. I mean, that's a very nice thing. But if this was, my question is, how does this fit in? Is this a separate track altogether? I mean, we're going to try and understand the phenomena. What did Moshe, what did Moshe actually communicate to him? So, I mean, if this was the message, if the message was about this whole business with the Ashtarchov and everything, so that should have been stated openly. I mean, it's clear, it's not... The negotiators, when they came to Melech Edom, didn't talk about this. They didn't talk about this and say, well, this is what your brother, who is a descendant of, you're both descendants and this and that, and you may have a claim. This was not the Pshuto Shel Mikra. How does it fit in other words? Is Pshuto Shel Mikra, is Chazal operating, telling you to understand it in two ways? First of all, understand it according to Pshuto Shel Mikra. And then I'll tell you a different one. I mean, the two should come together somewhere. What is Pshuto Shel Mikra? And in other words, you're right, this seems to be contradictory. This would seem to be a bit arrogant, like he's, Pshuto Shel Mikra, he's appealing to him as a supplicant from a position basically of weakness. Position of weakness. According to the Medrash, he's not in a position of weakness. He's telling him quite clearly, you have no claim, this and that. It sounds a bit arrogant. I mean, whether it's true, it's maybe true. But the point is like this, all these things may be true, but you see, you got to put yourself in diplomacy. You have to know your own situation. You're the supplicant. You're the supplicant. And you know very well that very often you'll be in a position where, in terms of justice and everything, something is coming to you, right? Because of what the other person, you know, let's say you're asking for a favor from a high official who's in power now. And part of the argument is that you know what we both went through and what I did for you and this and that, right? So that's your leverage. You know, I did a tremendous thing for you when you were down and out, and now you're in tremendous power. I need you. But that's true. You want to get that across, but you're not going to state that openly. You're going to take cognizance of the man's position right now. And you're going to be respectful and honorable. You're not going to tell him, well, look, I did this for you, but it's very nice. It's very true. But right now he's got the power. You don't. So right now, Moshe had to deal with the reality of Edom. Edom was in power, and Moshe needed something. So I want to know, my question is, how does the Medrashim, how does that meaning fit in with the plain meaning? Okay? Now, there's one further thing I want to get at, which I, another Medrash, I mentioned yesterday, that there's different kinds of Medrashim. There are certain kinds of Medrashim which are on a different level, a deeper meaning. You know, you've seen a lot of those all over the place. They don't contradict the plain meaning of the Pasuk. They don't contradict, but rather they go a little bit deeper, or they have a different point. They help you to understand it.
Give it a little flavor.
Yeah. For example, you have by the Brachos, Vitl Nacholakim Mital Hashemayim, and Galim Mital Hashemayim, Umishmani Haaretz. You know, the bracha that Yitzchak gave to Yaakov. So Chazal say, Tal Hashemayim, that's Torah Shebichtav. Mishmani Haaretz, that's Torah Shebaal Peh. So it's something completely... Here it's talking about the physical. So it means, it's not a contradiction, it means that the bracha was basically relating to the physical, but the physical as a means to the spiritual. So the Medrash qualifies, it's qualifying. Take a look at the Rashi over here. Velonishta me be'er. Take a look at Velonishta me be'er. So Rashi says, me boros hayetzarach lomar. It should have said, me boros. We won't drink the plural. We won't drink from the waters of your wells. Right? So why does it say me be'er? What does that mean? Elakach omar Moshe. But this is what Moshe said. Afapisha yesh biyadenu mon lechol uve'er lishtos. Even though we have food to eat, mon to eat, and our own be'er. They had, until the death of Miriam, they had their own water supply through an ace. We have our own water. Lo nishta bimenu. We won't drink from it, and we won't eat from our own food. But we'll buy from you. We'll buy food and drink for your benefit. And then we learn a lesson from this. From here we learn that a traveler, even though he has his own food, it's a good lesson. In other words, you know, just especially applicable to Jews. You know, Jews go traveling all over. They can't eat aloha, so they bring their own food. And they eat their own. It's good to try and buy something. Of course, it has to be kosher, but you buy in the local where you're going. You know, it shouldn't appear like you're just out for your own benefit. You know, wherever you're going, you're a stranger. So it's good practice to try and spend some money. Yeah, to strengthen the economy, and that way people will be happy to have you. Okay. The thing, what's the problem over here? The problem is, it goes contrary to the pasuk itself. I mean, how could you have a medrash? It's nice to have a medrash, right, to qualify, but this is not qualifying it. You can't tell me that this qualifies the pshuto. The pshuto is saying what? We won't drink yeah. That's what nishta meve'er means. Rashi didn't mean to change the pshat and meve'er. Lo nishta meve'er. We won't drink the waters of the be'er, which means to say we won't use yours. Comes the Chazal and saying, no, we won't drink our own. What's factually speaking, what was the thing? Whose are they going to drink? According to the Torah Shebichtav, they're going to drink their own. According to Torah Shebaal Peh, they're going to drink theirs. I mean, what was the message? Whose are they going to drink? How does this medrash work together with the thing? It's a contradiction. It eliminates the pshat. Okay. These are the basic questions that I would like to address myself to. All right? First of all, Rashi's idea is a good idea. You could ask further. Rashi's idea is a good idea. It's good policy. It's good policy when you're going somewhere to buy from them, right? And if Moshe is willing to do that, he should have stated that openly then. So that should have been the thing. We'll buy from you, Lohanaskan.
that seem to refer to that idea as a comeback.
That there's difference. In other words, the wells, the first, if they're going to the city, they're talking about the wells, their own wells that they use for their own private water supply. That's one thing. So therefore, he was saying, oh, look, I'm not going to, it's very important to you. The other thing is that they're going to the mountains and there's streams in the mountains and so forth, right? Which they don't count upon for their water supply. So therefore, you won't be mocked on that. But nevertheless, I'm telling you that if I do use it, I'll pay. You see, in other words, when the appeal was to go through the city, so they're talking about their important, the wells that everybody uses. And that's very vital for them. So he's guaranteeing them that he won't use that. Forget about it, even for money. That's important to you. You need that. That we're not going to touch. Then when he's saying about going through the mountains, you don't need that water. So that we can drink, we can be free and drink it. But nevertheless, I'll pay you for it. I'm not just going to schnur. I'll pay you for it. It's yours. Even though you don't need it. So that's why it's a different thing over there.
Yeah.
I think it's Ramban, or it's maybe Samson Farl Hirsch, I think, might have brought out this point. Yeah, they have some nice commentary.
So
against Rashi. No, that's a different plan. That's a different plan. If they got Masila, but Masila now is a different plan.
Shuto Shal Mikra.
Yeah, right. Go ahead. In order to understand the message over here, right, you have to, what is the underlying factors which determine, the underlying determinants in the whole thing over here, in structuring a message? What are the underlying determinants? You have to understand, in other words, you have to put yourself in the position of Moshe Rabbeinu. But Moshe Rabbeinu, when you put yourself in that position, if you want, you're in the situation, right? Let's look at it this way. You've got to evaluate. Before a person can formulate a strategy, right, he has to evaluate the nature of what he wants to accomplish. That's one thing. And secondly, what's the most important thing, right? Exactly, the mentality. The mentality of the person that you're going to request it from. That's very, very important. You see? Now, a lot of times an initiative fails because a person, like a lot of times a person asks a favor and he doesn't realize, he just, in his own mind, oh, of course the guy, it's no big deal, this and that. In his own mind, it's not a big deal, this and that. So he doesn't think about it carefully. In other words, he's got to put himself in the position of the other person. And he's got to be able to anticipate the emotion, the effect that that's going to have on the other person. Very often, people can't do it for emotion and ego reason. In other words, it's normally the case, you know, like among friends. You know, when one person, when you ask the other person for something, so it's nothing, was it's a little favor, this, that. I mean, you see how the ego operates over here to distort the thing. When you're the one that's asking, so the favor's not so big, what's the big deal, this and that. What did I ask him to do? He stopped, he's in the city anyway, so he makes a few extra stops and this, and that's not a big deal. Of course, when it's the other way around, when you're being asked to do certain things, this guy's a pain in the neck, it's hot, I'm stuck in the summer, I can't wait to get home, and now I have to make another stop over there. I mean, how difficult, it's not easy to measure objectively. Whether it's a difficult, whether it's a big deal or not a big deal, it's a very subjective kind of thing. Now, in point of fact, it wasn't a small thing Moshe was asking for. Because to have a whole nation, it's over 1 million people. I don't know the exact numbers of the whole nation. If anybody, how much would it come to?
A couple of million people
to come through your land and to travel through the entire length and breadth of the land is a pretty big, that's such a simple thing. That's an important decision. That's an important decision to make. Because anything could happen. What do I have to, I mean, it's a whole nation over here. They can go rampant. You can have conflicts. You can have fights. You can have all kinds of problems. They can loot. I mean, why should he do it?
Sure, numbers, they would also.
So why should he do it? So Moshe Rabbeinu recognized all this. You see? Now, therefore, like this. Therefore, in order for Moshe Rabbeinu to be successful, what did he have to do? He had to, first of all, he had to anticipate the resistances. In other words,
what are his options?
He had to anticipate how this will affect the other party, that is to say, to isolate and anticipate the negatives, the resistances that the other party would have to doing it. That's what he had to do. That's the first thing.
The rebuttal.
In other words, why would the resistances? In other words, it's naturally, the natural thing is going to encounter resistance. Why should I do it? No. But he had to, in his own mind, he had to understand what they were, to isolate them and to anticipate them in order to be able to remove them, to alleviate them, to remove the resistances. But let's say Moshe would have succeeded 100%. You know, and removing all the negatives. Would that be sufficient? What do you think? Would that be sufficient? I've
frame the message, and in this message I'll show you how I've gotten rid of all the... No. Why not? You have to have the positive as well. You have to have positives as well. Let's say, otherwise I can prove to you that you're not going to lose anything. But still, why should I do it? There's got to be a positive incentive as well. You see, because you're asking somebody to go out of his way. And he doesn't have to do it. There's got to be something positive there as well. So I want to say like this. What were the negatives over here? As you take a look at the... let's deal with Pshuto Shel Mikra for the time being. Forget about the Chazal, about Edom and Shtachov. What would you say were the major ones? I know you could list 20 or 30, but what were the major ones that we see reflected in the address? I would say two major negatives. What were they? Exactly. Fear of physical danger. In other words, you have a whole group of... It's a whole nation. Who knows what they could do? They can take over. This could be the beginning of a plot to take over the whole country. It's a dangerous thing. I'm letting you right in. I'm exposing my... First thing is the normal fear of physical danger. Okay. Let's deal with that. Then out there, the way I have it formulated, there were two major negatives. Okay? The first one is that. You see, where does Moshe dispel that? Where does Moshe deal with that? He brings it up. In other words, yeah, of course, but that doesn't... But that's no... That's true.
Yeah, Achicha Yisrael.
Achicha Yisrael, yeah, but I think that's why it goes into the whole thing about Mitzrayim. In other words, Edom knew what happened to this people. This was a people that was enslaved. It wasn't that he didn't know the facts. This is a people that was enslaved by Mitzrayim. And Mitzrayim is one of the most powerful... was supposedly the most powerful nation in the world. They freed themselves from Mitzrayim. They must be feeling kind of strong. They must be feeling aggressive. They've just defeated the mightiest empire. That's going to be a big problem over here. That's why he brings up... the whole issue of Mitzrayim. Atay Adate is called Tala Hashem Mitzah Asnu. You know all of the hardships that we had. Vayerdo Asenu Mitzrayim. Vaneish Mitzrayim Yomram Vayereu Lanu. All this is very important. But Vanitzak El Hashem. In other words, I want you to recognize that the nature of this people, it's a peace-loving people. Don't think that the fact that we were enslaved and we've gotten freed has changed that we're a conquering nation. We're not a conquering nation. It all came about by Nitzak al Hashem, Vayishma Kolenu, Vayishlach Malach, Vayotzienu Mitzrayim. If you take a look at Rashi mentions, of course it's a Drush, he says we got out by
Bebracha.
But what's the Bracha? What's the Bracha? The Bracha is a kol Yaakov. We've never lost that. The Bracha she'eshev beirachnu avinu a kol Yaakov shonim tzuakim v'nenim. Which means to say, on the practical... So what does he care? You mean he cares about that? From a spiritual standpoint? It means to say that you have nothing to fear from us. The message over here was you have nothing to fear from us. Because first of all, we're a weak people that was enslaved to begin with. We're people that was taken over by Mitzrayim and we were enslaved. And even though it now seems that we are a powerful nation, this has nothing to do with us. Because we recognize that everything which occurred had nothing to do with our own power. It was purely the result of the Ashkacha of God. So we were totally passive. Ayishlach Malach, we were totally passive. And I would say, moreover, again, you see, it's multifaceted. It's multifaceted. I don't want to overdo it, but a lot of things are being insinuated. Also, you don't have anything to fear. So you don't have anything to fear for two reasons. First of all, because we're not physically aggressive, and also because spiritually, in other words, we saw what happened to the Egyptians. The Egyptians by a Reulano. So we recognize what happened. Why did we get out? After all, not because of our own power, but because of God. And why did God? Because God demands that there be justice in the world. And since we were being dealt with unjustly, so God took us out. So we're not going to deal with you unjustly. In other words, the message on two levels. We're not a conquering people, and we have no incentive, in other words, to act unjustly. Now you might say that, well, of course you could say that. He could say anything he wants. You see? But Melech Edom is going to go by what he sees. Oh, that's fair enough. Of course you're telling me that, Vanitzak al Hashem, Vayishma Kolenu. You see? How do I know? Maybe you do feel your oats. Maybe you do feel like a conqueror. Yes, Danny? I see, there's many things that are there, but I don't think that's the primary motivation was to get permission to enter the land. Not that Moshe's afraid that we're going to be missed. You follow? In other words, I'm not saying that Moshe right now, on his agenda, is worried that once he gets in the land, they're going to mistreat them.
You see, but then you see,
I don't think that was a prime determinant. Because the prime determinant was not, Moshe wasn't concerned at this point that they'd be mistreated. He was concerned that he wouldn't get permission to go in. Yes, sir. Yeah. Make a deal. He wasn't doing it. He didn't say it in any way, by the way. You have to realize also, he wasn't saying it. Of course you can look. You can,
the large difference between you and yeah.
He can't, Moshe must deal with this fact. It's a known thing that they were enslaved by Mitzrayim and now they're free. There's no way he cannot deal with it.
Just
the thing is like this though, the main thing, you see, of course, you see, anytime I say anything to you, I have to choose. I have a limited amount of options. Anything I say to you might be good for one point of view and might arouse a different emotion. I mean, there's no question about that. You see, in fact, Edom didn't let him go through. I don't know, maybe that's what happened. But the point of it is, though, that there's no way that Moshe cannot deal with Mitzrayim. Now, he has two choices. Either he takes the credit.
Mitzrayim or Edom?
I'm saying with the fact that, with the fact that we were in Mitzrayim and now we're here. That's a very important piece of history. And now we're in, so how did we get here? What are we talking about? Why are we here now? In other words, how did he get out of Mitzrayim?
We were oppressed.
Let me develop it some more. I'm explaining to you how he has to eliminate the factor of fear. That you have nothing, but we're not a conquering people. Therefore, when he says, we won't go to the right, we won't go to the left, etc. You have nothing to fear from us. That's the first thing he has to do. Let me see. I think he'll deal with that problem, that the envy that God did something for them as well. I think that comes into the picture, because there's many layers over here. What's the other resistance? What's the other major resistance?
Loss of resources.
No. That's the first one. The first one is, yeah. The second one is jealousy over Yerusha's Arutz, clearly. The second one is jealousy over Yerusha's Arutz. And here's where I believe the Medrash of Chazal ties in with the Pasuk. Although I'll show you how it ties in, a little bit, to a certain extent. Now, how does he deal with the envy? The envy, what's the envy over here? The envy is that you're getting something. You see? The envy is that you're getting something. No. Forget about the religious envy. That's there too. But you're being your racial land. That's a tremendous, this guy's getting a benefit. In other words, there's a natural envy about the other one. When you see that somebody else won a prize, there's a natural envy. It arouses everybody's envy, and it's very bothersome to people. And if there's any way that they could prevent that person from getting it, you'll see that, they'll try and do so. Why? Because, why do people feel envy? Let's say another guy won a lottery. Why is there an envy? It's not so much for the physical thing itself, that you have to realize. It's not so much because he has $5 million. And he could do such and such. It's not a practical, rational thing. The envy is each person wants to feel in his own mind that he's God's favorite, that he's the chosen one. And therefore, what?
Yeah.
The recognition of being God's favorite. And therefore, that's the bother. See, when somebody else gets something, it takes away. See, everybody wants to win. That's why the desire to win, winning is different than earning. As somebody one time said, money earned, it doesn't compare to money won. It's a different entity entirely. Winning. You see, it's people spend hours in gambling and this and that. Tremendously powerful emotion. It's the idea. I don't have to work. He beats the system. He's God's favorite. You see, he's God's favorite. That's why when you win a prize, the amount of joy is not commensurate with the nature of the thing. It could be something which is not that important. You wouldn't buy it. But the fact that you won is a tremendous thing. Now, therefore, he has to contend with the fact that there's envy for Yerusha's Arutz. They're getting something. And therefore, since that's the case, there's a tremendous resistance, because he doesn't want to see that the other guy is the favorite son. The other guy is the favorite son. So what? So he won't let him go through. How does Moshe counter that? How does Moshe counter that? What? Well, we're brothers. But so what? What? I can't hear you. Avi, I can't hear you. It could have been you. So it could have been me. Is that going to do it? Okay, that's the important thing. The important thing is, I don't know, see, so much it could have been you. You see, to tell a guy that it could have been you can get him upset, then he's going to feel really upset.
Should have been.
It could have been me is worse. See, it couldn't have been you. The real message is, I'll tell you, the real message is that it couldn't have been you. It's not the real message of that it was really for both and you didn't want it is it couldn't have been you. That's what he's really telling you. It couldn't have been you. I'll show you how that fits in.
But we need to pay the
price. It couldn't have been you, yeah. Because this is not for you. This is not your thing. That's what he's really telling him. But before we get to that, Before we get to that, he's telling them like this. You see, let's say you read in the paper about someone that was just awarded $5 million. So the natural thing, you'll feel this emotion of envy, like he's the favorite. Then let's say you meet this person and you tell him, boy, you're so lucky. You know, I envy you, like you won this thing. You know, all the emotions. Then the person says, what? Let me tell you the background of this thing. And you don't know, you didn't know about the Holocaust and all that. And he tells you about the Holocaust. And he tells you, he got the money, he was awarded by the German government, its reparations. But the one the person heard didn't know. He says, you're envying me, I won something. I lost, and he has to tell him, I lost my family, my children, and what I saw over there, and I was in Auschwitz, and this, and that, and he shows him physically how he's been ruined and wrecked. And this is nothing. Then the guy walks away. Would he still feel envy, but you're getting 5 million? The answer is no. You see, because it's not the fact that he has X amount, that he has 5 million. It's the fact that this qualifies him as being the chosen person, as being the favorite. If he knows that, I don't envy you at all. Take it. It's yours. It's not the kind, you're not the one. It dispels. You see, it dispels the underlying emotion of envy. Because you know, that's what he's telling it to him. He's saying, what do you think, that we're fortunate? That God gave us a tremendous boon? That's the fantasy. See, the fantasy is not that we're going to suffer, and then get a little compensation. The fantasy is that you're favored, and you're selected for a great benefit. That's why he's telling him, you wouldn't want it. If you would know all the suffering that we went through, I tell you that this Klaus Lasha, you know, by a Reuo son and this, it's a whole thing. That's where he brings in the idea of the Shtarchov. You see, that's where he brings in the idea of the Shtarchov. That this is all part of, this is not a benefit over here. This is not a winning, this is not a prize. This is something which comes as part of the whole Shtarchov. And you didn't want, if you would know what it was, you wouldn't want it. That's the idea. You see, Lefichach Piresh. Now, the thing is like this. I just want to mention, with regard to the envy is on two levels. The envy is on the level of Pshuto Shel Mikra, the envy is with regard to the fact that they're getting a land. And even though Edom has a land already, it doesn't matter. Because it's not that he needs another land. It's that he wants to prevent the other guy from being God's favorite. Why should he get it? That means he's the favorite. He got something for nothing. That's why Moshe is telling him not to be envious about that. As far as the other is concerned, there's another element of envy. The envy about the fact that being God's chosen people. You see, you mentioned before that God does things for us. God's chosen people. He deals with that as well. Achicha Yisrael. Kamar Achicha. The word achicha is a very important word over here. Why did he start off with achicha? So Rashi says, he gives the medrash of achva, tell him that past thing. But the word achicha is very important on the plain level. So you have to realize, Moshe didn't just start a friendly greeting. It's true, it's friendly, achicha, but that word is chosen very carefully. It has a determinant. There are certain situations where you would use the word achicha. There are certain situations where you don't use the word achicha. Give me an example of a case where you would not use the word achicha. It doesn't have to be with the Jews. Give me a case where of a different group that wouldn't use the word achicha. The thing is like this. For example, let's say the blacks in the South, say 50 years ago. Let's put that mentality, or in South Africa. All right? I'm not, I don't want to say anything which is pejorative or anything. I'm just telling you, given the mentality of how the whites in the South looked at black people 50 years ago, or in South Africa. Let's say a similar situation. And a group of blacks were freed, whatever it is, and they want to go through a state which is run by whites. Would they say Kamar Achicha? No. You see, where the party you're addressing looks down on you and considers you to be the whole basis yeah. Over there is that you're inferior to me. You see, people think there's nothing in common between the anti-black feeling and anti-Semitism. It's two completely different phenomena. The whites in the South. It's not an inherent hatred of the blacks. They don't inherently hate blacks. They just view them as being inferior. And therefore, they don't want to be together with them. Shmuel, you've been in the South for a while. I mean, maybe, I don't know, it's the New South. I don't know how it is today, but it hasn't changed. You see, in that case, when the underlying thing is that you look down on the person, and then to say, achicha is really an affront, that would be absurd. Because who are you to call that is the very idea with antagonize? Who are you to call yourself my brother? That his whole emotion is that you're not my brother. You're an inferior, a subspecies. But the thing is like this. With regard to the Jews, it's just the opposite. With regard to the Jews, you have to realize that one of the factors is in the is envy, this tremendous envy. That the Gentile doesn't acknowledge it openly. But the point of it is that see, one of the factors which brings about anti-Semitism is that the Jews themselves often do this, because the Jews consider themselves to be superior, even though it's, I mean, that's based upon we're a chosen people. Now, chosen people doesn't mean to say that we are superior, and the Torah speaks against that, but many Jews actually convey that feeling, and the Gentile senses it. Here it's the envy. We are the chosen people.
He says, but take a look at the
guy, I still choose the Jew. But the point is, the Jew, the fact that the Jew was chosen is not because he's superior, because it says, Lo me rubchem. Lo me rubchem. It's not because of your good, it's not because of, no. Lo v'tzidkascha. Lo v'tzidkascha. It says so in the Devarim, that you weren't chosen because of your, it's only because of lo v'yoshalavachem. It was only, that's right, so that's an accident. It's only because of the Evos. So it's an accident of birth. The Torah is trying to warn us not to feel superior. Now, the thing is like this. In practical relations, it is the fact, very often, see, the Gentile does feel a certain sense of inferiority on an unconscious level, because the Jews, he does recognize the Jews have something. Can't deny it. The Torah, they have the Torah, they have ability, they're aggressive, they're successful. The guy recognizes this. But the worst thing, I'm sorry? But what brings it out is like this, you'll see. When the Jew acts in a way where he flaunts it, where he lets the guy feel that he is superior, even if it's overtly, however he does so, it brings out this emotion. Because nobody wants to feel inferior. That's one of the most painful emotions is to feel inferior. That's why in today's world, like apartheid, the whole thing, it's like one of the worst things in the entire world. There's worse atrocities, I mean, that were committed than what the blacks have in South Africa, but nevertheless, the whole world sympathizes with this, because you're saying these people are inferior. So therefore, he says, achicha. It's a very important thing that Jews have to deal, when Jews deal with Gentiles, they always have to recognize that. That the use of the word achicha is very, very important. Achicha, he dispels that. You see? But then he tells them one more thing. He dispels, you shouldn't have any envy. You shouldn't have any envy because we're inheriting a land, we're getting a physical benefit, because it's not a physical benefit. It's compensation. It goes with the whole shtar chov over here. And also don't envy us the religiousness. That fact that God has chosen, you see, that God has chosen us. Because lefichach pirish, it's not something that you really go for. Lefichach pirish, because it entails a whole different way of life. Why do you separate? Because it involves, why do we have to have a shibbet over there? Because it's a different way of life. It means giving up the physical, and it's a totally different thing. Your fantasy is like, of having a land is a different kind of thing. It's like a physical fantasy. That's not what we're given. You see? It's not anything you should be envious about, because it's not something that you would even want. It's not something you could have had. It's not you. It's not the thing that you want. That's being conveyed, of course, in a very subtle way. That he's not telling him openly that you're not on the level. But that's the message. In other words, we don't view. You see, that's what brings out a lot of anti-Semitism also. In other words, when the Jews, you see, what causes hatred for the Jews? When the Jews go out of the area, the guy can accept. You see that in the case with Yaakov and Lavan.
One second. On one side?
I'm not denying that. The Torah does give us a rational pattern over here. You see, what's the most correct approach? So you see that when the Jews amass wealth, for example, as long as the Jews stay within their area and they use that wealth modestly and they devote their main energies to serving God, there's less of a chance of envy. That's why Yaakov told Lavan, "Im Lavan Garti v'Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti." Told Esav, "V'Tayag Mitzvah Shamarti." But as long as the guy feels that the Jew doesn't have the physical, so he just has the spiritual, doesn't bother him, because he himself doesn't value the spiritual. But when he begins to go for both, when he begins to compete, in other words, with him in his own area, he goes after the physical as well, that's when the envy of the guy is brought out. So that's why he's telling him that don't be envious over here. Because it's not a physical benefit that we're getting, it's a spiritual. We're involved in spiritual benefit. Yes? I don't have time to expand on that now. In other words, he's saying the way the situation is there, the Jews are flaunting it. By the way, that's why you see in Germany, where the worst anti-Semitism is, that's where you have the highest degree of assimilation. The Jews had gone furthest away from the observance of the Torah, were totally involved in every area of German economic life, etc., etc. That's a factor. That is a factor. I can't tell you, though, that's the only factor. There's no question that there's other factors as well. But the Torah does point it out for the Jews. As far as America today, the Jews are going in that position. We haven't seen the results of it, but that causes anti-Semitism. I can't In other words, if you mean to question me and say, how come there's no Holocaust over here? I mean, that's the historical phenomenon. There's many factors, and we haven't seen the end of it yet. But the path that the Jews are following in America today, when you read in the papers, tremendous wealth, and it involves unethical with insider trading, and this, and then Jews driving or building the
you
biggest...
You know what was
in other words...
Say,
you see? There's no question about it. Now, the Jews are going in a very dangerous direction in America. They're going against the way that the Torah prescribes. All right. I just want to finish up. I'll try and answer questions afterwards or next week. I want to finish up the point. Now, I would say up to this point, up to Navrana, the objective was the elimination of the negatives. And the two major negatives were physical danger to Edom that the Jews might represent, and B, envy. And you see how effectively Moshe has dispelled them. The question then is, though, what's the positive incentive? Where's the positive incentive? Where's the positive incentive?
They
will help their economy. Nabrana b'yatzecha, lo nishtemei b'er. There'll be some positives over here as well. My question is, if that's the case, so why is that... you see, when Chazal says, let me put it to you this way. When Chazal say like this, the pasuk says, we will eat our own food. We won't drink your food. We won't eat your food or drink your water. We'll eat our own. Medrash comes along and says just the opposite. So what's the truth? What is the truth then? The truth is like this, that there was an overt message and a covert message. That's what Moshe instructed them to do. What was the overt message? The overt message is, we'll use our own. We won't use anything of yours. What was the covert message? Let them know, however you can, that if you want, if you would like, we'll buy everything from you. But that's to be done covertly. Why is that? In other words, what the meaning of Hadis Chazal fits into Pshut HaShemek is there's no contradiction. But there's an overt message and a covert message. The overt message is, well, we won't use your stuff. We'll use our own stuff. The covert message is, if you want, we'll buy only from you. Lahana Ascha. But if that's the case, then why was that done covertly? Why not openly?
Because by getting...
In other words, like this. You see, if you're asking for something, the most powerful appeal... You see, this is how the whole world works. When you get people to do tzedakah and charitable works and all that, you see? If you can frame, the most effective way to get somebody to do something is, you appeal to the person's sense of being a tzaddik. That's the most powerful desire a person has is to feel that he's a tzaddik, to feel good about himself. That's a very powerful thing. And that's why you see, I was just mentioning to somebody, that people act differently in different situations. In other words, there are people that are on a small level try to be as friendly, as helpful as possible. Oh, let me do this for you. Oh, let me open. When it comes to small things, you see, people are extremely, they go out of their way to be nice. When it comes to like a small bill, let me take that if it's small. When it comes to big things, then it's a different kind of a story. You see, then it's a different kind of story. Why? Because people have a tremendous desire to feel that they're good, to feel that they're a tzaddik. The only thing is that there's a tremendous conflict. Come into conflict with yourself. In order to be a real tzaddik and to really feel good about yourself, you have to make sacrifices and do for the other guy. And it's tirch and give up your own time and television and whatever it is. So there's a conflict. So a person tries to seek the way out. In other words, up to a certain point of sacrifice, of conflict. So then you opt for the feeling of being a tzaddik. When the stakes get too high, then it's something else. It's a real conflict. Now, if you want to get somebody else to do something, the best approach is to appeal to a sense that you'll be known as a tremendous tzaddik. Idealism. You say, you're doing it, you're doing this thing. This is what all these charities, you know. You get a person, and then at the end of the year, he's honored, there's a big testimonial, and all it says about is what a tremendous tzaddik this person is, and he's how selfless and selfless. Meanwhile, what's selfless? He's getting all this honor, and he's getting all this recognition. So it's not selfless. But that can never be brought out into the open, you see? You don't tell a guy, well, come on, help us out, and do a good thing, and at the end of the year, you'll get a tremendous testimonial. If you tell him that, forget it. You see? You tell him that, forget it. It takes away the whole thing. But if you can find something, I'll find something for you to do, which will be a tremendous idealistic thing, and at the same time, you'll have the full, all the instincts that are going, you see? The desire for money is going to be satisfied simultaneously. That's the most powerful thing. That's why Hitler and Machshmo was so successful. They said, what was his genius of being a speaker, appealing to the people? Because he was able to take something which was a powerful instinct, the aggressiveness of the people, and he gave it the whole surah of a superego thing, of an ideal. You see, that's the most... He was able to corrupt the entire superego. So he had all the energy of the instincts, the aggressive instincts, and now they could have a matir through the fact that the Aryan race is a tremendous noble ideal. So therefore Moshe Rabbeinu knew that he had to give him an incentive. What was the positive incentive? You're a great tzaddik. You'll be doing a great thing about for a nation that was taken out. You know, I tell you that that's called to law, you know, and that we were enslaved and God took us out. What you're doing is a tremendously wonderful deed. You see? So therefore, then you won't, and of course, you're not going to lose anything. You're not going to lose, you won't lose anything. That's Gertie, you're right there. He told him you won't lose anything. You see? But Moshe Rabbeinu recognized that it's nice, everybody wants to be a tzaddik, and Melech Adam also wants to be a tzaddik. Everybody wants to be a tzaddik. You see? But in order to be a tzaddik, you say you got to also deal with the guy's desire for gain. That he said to be very subtle. In other words, let him know very subtly that this tzidkus will not be just an abstract tzidkus, but it'll be a profitable tzidkus as well. That had to be kept in. You see, that had to be kept in. That's why that's the Chazal. Chazal said he spoke to him on the overt level. He told him, "Lo nishta meber. We're not gonna use our own. That's necessary for Gertie's point. But it's also important that you're not doing this. You're not doing this for any gain." You're a great man. We'll recognize you as a great man. Let them know also that there'll be money coming into the coffers as well. So that's the whole overview. In other words, the two parts of the message go together. The two parts of the message go together. The part one is designed basically to eliminate the negatives, which are the negatives of physical danger that the Jews might pose, and also envy. You see, and that he does skillfully through the whole thing of Mitzrayim. He can incorporate both into Mitzrayim. We're not a conquering people. We're a very docile, we're a very peace-loving people, in spite of everything. At the same time, he also removes the fact that he might be envious, that we're the beneficiaries of a great thing. We're coming into a Yerusha now. It's a fantastic thing. No. If you know the whole background and how we look at it, you will see that A, it's not a tremendous, it's a result of suffering, and B, it's not the kind of benefit that you can identify with because it's not the physical for the sake of the physical. And then he recognizes that he has to also sweeten the pot. He has to sweeten the pot to make it lucrative. But by making it, the lucrativeness has to be kept hidden, has to be kept secret, so that in the man's own mind, he will appeal. Ultimately, the positive is an appeal to the other guy's desire to feel that he's a great tzaddik. That's a very, very important thing you have to recognize. You see, when you're dealing with people, it's a very powerful thing. Everybody wants to be a tzaddik. Of course, they don't always act in a way that would indicate that, but they bring in their own. You have to know the guy's own psyche. People that do all kinds of things. You'll see, every witness that comes up to testify in the hearings, this, that, and I'm not saying who you agree with or don't you agree with, but people will admit they made mistakes. They made mistakes, and Reagan made a mistake, and everybody makes mistakes. But no one ever admits that he had bad intentions. No one ever admits that he had bad intentions. Every time the intentions were good. And even a prayer, whatever he did is always for the right. I did what I thought was necessary, what I thought was best. I got lost. I may have made a mistake. You see? Because a person, that's a very, very important thing to a person. Very, very. People chat. It's the whole basis of people's religion. People's religions. Why are they so fanatic about their religion? It's not because it gives them a sense that they're good. They have to have a sense that they're good. It's a strange thing because, you know, we look at a person, we think, if this person really cared about being good, how could he act this way? You have to know how people can twist things in their own mind. These people, people that are doing the most disgusting, maneuverable type of things, in their own minds don't feel about themselves the way you look at them. So therefore, you have to recognize that in dealing with other people, you see also, by the way, you see the perfection of Moshe Rabbeinu. The perfection of Moshe Rabbeinu was not just the brilliance in terms of the insight, but also in terms of his emotional, you see, that he was able to really put aside all of his own emotions. Put aside all of his own emotions because, you see, I didn't go into that aspect, but you have to recognize that to be successful, or to diplomatically, you have to put aside your own emotions as well. Because, let's put it this way, if you were in that situation, and you're asking, because you have to realize that asking for a favor it goes against your own emotions of ego. You have to assume a very docile position. You have to subordinate your own ego when you're asking for a favor, right? So as long as you can lessen the dependence, the more you can offer, you want to offer. Oh, by the way, look, I mean, I'm not asking for such a favor. I have money to offer you. We'll buy things. You'll benefit. You see, there's a tremendous ego to many. You know, I'm not a supplicant anymore. But Moshe didn't do it. Moshe recognized that wouldn't be good, so he subordinated any emotions of his own. Of course, as we see, the thing failed.
Why?
It was so good. How could it fail?
Yes. Mentioned the response.
Yeah.
All right. The curve. I would say like this. Let me just think about it a little bit more. As far as I mentioned at the very beginning, that you can't judge. You can't judge. You can't judge the. validity of an approach necessarily by the result. Because in the area of human relations, there are too many variables. Don't think that you're going to be... all these people, you know, people get carried away with themselves. They, you know, they become political scientists, and they think they're so terrific, and they, you know, they have a little success. And now they think they've got the formula. There's no absolute formula, because it's not an absolute science, because you're dealing with emotions. Now, the thing is, when you're dealing with emotions, you can anticipate emotions qualitatively. In other words, I can if I get to know a person pretty well, so I can know his emotions qualitatively, but you can never predict another guy's behavior, because there are too many variables and too many quantities. You don't know the quantities. You know, for example, like you were Nazis. You read about the Holocaust. There were certain Nazis that could be bribed. Jews, many Jews would save their lives by bribery. They paid them off and they escaped. And many Nazis couldn't be bribed. Now, those Nazis that could be bribed, they hated the Jews as well. It's not the fact that they didn't hate the Jews. But the point is, there are two emotions over there. There's the emotion of hatred of the Jew, and then there's the emotion of the love of money. The question is, which one is more powerful? Now, for some, it's a quantitative factor. For some, the love of money was a more powerful incentive, so that it would force them to overcome their hatred and let the Jew go. They wanted the Jews to be killed too, but there was love of money. For others, the hatred was so powerful that it overcame the love of money. So you don't always know. I would say the same thing over here, that... although I can't say for sure which emotion it would seem that Hembacher was an aggressive one. You see? That he had a certain aggressiveness. He had a certain hatred due to the envy. There was an envy factor over there that he hadn't gotten over, that they're going to get something. And Moshe tried. Moshe realized it was there, and he tried to alleviate it, and he couldn't do so. The emotion, sometimes the emotion is too powerful. There's nothing you can do about it. Hembacher, they would indicate. And then Al-Kharbacher, he's bragging about his Kharab, you see? Which meant that his own ego was an ego kind of thing. L'chorah. So all I'm saying is that...
Why is it related back to the bracha?
Because he brought up the bracha, and he's answering him with the bracha.
So the same Hashem?
Tradition, where he comes from, is Yechus, you know? So he's... it could be. Let me think about it some more. I'm just tossing it out. What?
You pride yourself as a
boy. See, yeah. Atem is gone, makal would be that. In other words, it could be like... See, Guz mentioned that. See, Guz mentioned that. See, in saying what he had to say, it's impossible that he would not bring up these other things, which would you can't. In other words, like he said, well, why mention God? Why mention God? I mean, that already is going to make him envious. There's no way he cannot mention it. He has no choice. He has to. You have a limited amount of options. Now you have to talk about Mitzrayim. You have to explain how you got out of there. You see? So therefore, he's got to mention it. What's he going to say? That we overpowered them. We snuck out. I mean, he can't tell you something stupid or something which anything which indicates that you did it as a result of your own power is going to be bad. So you're a powerful nation. So now you got both. Now you got that. I am power. Definitely I'm not going to help you. So, therefore, Moshe had to take that track. Vanitzak. Vanitzak. And then he had to deal with it to prevent the development of any envy for religious reasons. But that may be, you see, it may just be impossible. You find this all the time when you're talking to people about a certain thing. I have to mention about this thing. You know that when you mention it, it's going to bring up something else. Right? But you have no choice. You try and I know that other thing as well, and you try and dampen it. But that other emotion could be so powerful. There's nothing you can do about it. All we see is that. What we learn from this is like this: living the correct life is not measured in terms of always succeeding. A person is not responsible. Let's put it this way. It's a very important point. Lots of times, I mean, raising children. You know, parents have a tremendous sense of responsibility and want to do the right thing. Now, very often, if the kid didn't turn out correct, so parents feel terribly guilty. They feel it's their fault. Well, maybe it is their fault, maybe it's not. But sometimes it's not. In other words, a person's emotions in life normally are tied to the results. That is to say, if a parent did the right thing for his child, basically, I mean, it's good, you know, because we're not perfect. But basically speaking, he acted correctly and rationally. And the kid turns out bad. How should he feel? Or conversely, let's say a parent neglected, did all the wrong things, and the kid turned out fantastic. The parent neglected, he didn't care about his education, this, he was selfish. Meanwhile, the kid happened to be near a yeshiva and somebody helped him, this, and that. He turned into a tremendous Talmud Chacham. So now the thing is like this. The first parent, how will he feel? The one who did the right things. And the kid, he'll feel terrible. He'll feel sick. The other parent, who did all the wrong things, he'll feel fantastic. Look what a son I have. You see? The answer is that they're both irrational. Because it's absurd for a person's feeling about himself, right, to be dependent upon things that are out of his control. You don't have... In other words, when God told you have responsibility, it doesn't mean you're responsible for the results. You're responsible to act in a certain way for the effort, but you do it. How the situation appears to you. But the results are not in your control. So it's irrational to take responsibility for results that are outside of your control. Therefore, if a person acted rationally with his child, and the child turned out to be... you see, by the way, in some of the... in history, the greatest tzaddikim had children that turned out to be Rishayim. That's right.
Yitzchak.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Yitzchak. I mean, it happened throughout. You find later on, too. You find many cases. In fact, it's even the one who... Pesel Michya. Doesn't it trace it back to Moshe Rabbeinu?
Yep.
Pesel Michya. It's traced back. That's why it's covered up. I mean, because the Busha. But Michya was the one who introduced the Avodah Zarah by Sheva Dunn. So, this could happen. The thing is, a very important lesson to learn. That a person's feeling about himself should be based purely upon... The area that he's involved in other words, whether he acted correctly or not. And that's it. Once you act correctly, you do the correct thing, that's it. Then you go to sleep at night. And the outcome is not in your hands. Of course, that's why we pray. We must bow to Hashem. We want a good outcome, obviously, but we must bow to Hashem because we recognize that no matter what we do, there's other factors that we can't control. I'm saying the same thing over here with Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, you may look at it differently. I'm saying you could say that perhaps he made some mistakes. I'm saying that he acted, he worked it out as best he could given the factors, and it just was not there.